Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are on the very bottom line of Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet. That's 18b. All we have is the last line. There's two dots there on the last line. You'll see it's like four words in. Which is a quotation from the Mishnah. As we've mentioned before, anytime you have a text in between those two vertical diamond dots, it is a quotation from our Mishnah. So our Mishnah was talking about what kind of ink and what kind of paper a Megillah can be written on. So it mentions a number of inks that are no good for the Megillah. And the Gemara is going to identify what those inks are. So we're going to do it very briefly. Sam, the first kind of ink that's no good for Megillah, is called Sam. And the Gemara identifies this as Sama. And it is some kind of a paint. Rashi identifies it as orpiment, which is some kind of shellac paint. The next one is Sikra. That's also not a good ink. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Sikra Tashima. Sikra, he identifies as Sikrita, which is a red kind of ink. Rashi says that it was a kind of red ink that they used to paint shutters. But in any case, it had a reddish tinge to it, and it was no good. Kumus is the third kind of ink that is no good. Kumus, the Gemara identifies as Kuma. All of these things sound similar, but I guess they had slight differences in Talmudic times. Kuma is a kind of a resin. It comes from a tree, and it was either used to thicken an ink, or it could be used as an ink itself. And that is the third kind. The last kind is kankantum. We're at the very top of Yutan Amud Aleph now. That's the first word on 19a, is kankantum. That's the fourth kind of ink that's no good. And the Gemara identifies this as charta deushkafi. Some kind of a shoe polish. So it was black shoe polish, and that's what it was. So none of those kinds of ink are good. You had to use a special kind of ink that was called Dio. It's a long discussion in Tosfot about exactly what different kinds of Dio there were, and if it was the same kind of Dio as was used before. Is it the same kind of ink that's used for writing Sifrei Torah, which comes from the stuff that comes from gallnuts that grows on trees? In any case, the next section just deals briefly with parchments. So diftera is a kind of parchment that you're not supposed to write a Megillah on, and that kind of parchment is damaliach v'kamiach v'lo afitz. It was washed in salt water, and it was bathed in salt and washed in water, so it was partially prepared to become parchment, but it was not fully worked over to become parchment. So it's like an inferior kind of parchment, and it's not good for Megillah. And the other kind that is not good for Megillah is niyar, paper. That's the modern Hebrew word for paper. And here the Gemara identifies it as machaka. Now there are different interpretations of what machaka means. One interpretation is that it was a kind of a papyrus. That's what Rashi says. A paper, some kind of a paper, not really a parchment, that it came from a plant and not from an animal. And another possibility is that machak refers to erasing, that it was, sometimes they reused parchments, they would scrape them and get rid of what was on top of them, but you could still sometimes see, and nowadays with modern techniques, they can sometimes recover what was written on parchments that were scraped. So that could be that kind of parchment also is considered an inferior parchment. Okay, so that is a very small digression. We have again two diamond dots, which is quoting the last part of our Mishnah, which says, Ad shetehek tuva ashurit. It has to be written, the Megillah has to be written in Assyrian script. It has to be written in the Assyrian Hebrew script. How do we know? Dichtiv, as it is written in the Megillah, kichtavam v'chizmanam. And particularly we're saying it has to be written like the way it was originally written. And assuming that Mordechai and Esther wrote it in Hebrew, so it has to be written in the way they wrote it. We're assuming that Mordechai and Esther wrote it in Assyrian script, but that is the halacha. Okay, the last part of the Mishnah, continuation of the last part of the Mishnah, says that not only must it be written in the Assyrian script, but al ha-sefer ubidio. That's the last section that's in between two more diamond dots. Has to be written in a sefer, which means a book, but by this we mean probably a scroll. It has to be written in one scroll and with ink. V'chula, etc. Minalan, how do you know that it has to be written in a book and with ink? Atya Ktiva Ktiva. We're going to make a Gezeira Shava or a Hekesh between two kinds of writing. Ktiv Hacha, it's written in Esther, in the Megillah. Vatichtov Esther HaMalka, and Esther the Queen wrote. Uchtiv Hatam, and it's written in the book of Yirmiyahu in Jeremiah. Vayomer Lahem Baruch Mipiv Yikare Eli, et Kol Advarim Eli. He said to them, Baruch, from his mouth he read it to me, all of these matters. Va'ani, and I, Kotev ala sefer bidyo, I heard it directly from his mouth, and I wrote it on a scroll with ink. So we connect the Kotev of Yirmiyahu to the Ktiva of Esther to say that just as Yirmiyahu and Baruch wrote it on in a scroll and with ink, so too Esther would have as well. And that concludes our Mishnah. We're going to move on to the next Mishnah at the top of 19a. We are 2, 4, 6, 8 lines down in where the big bolded word says Matnita, the Mishnah. And this Mishnah is going to deal with two particular topics. One topic it's going to deal with is a person who travels or moves from an unwalled city to a walled city. So he's changing his location, and we want to know whether or not the change in location affects the way he should celebrate Purim, and especially when he should hear the Megillah. And also we want to know if it's required that the entire Megillah be read, or if one can be Yotze if they hear only part of the Megillah. So let's begin that Mishnah. Ben Ir, if a person lives in a city, and by this we mean an unwalled city, so he is responsible to celebrate Purim and to hear the Megillah on the night of the 14th and the day of the 14th. So this city dweller, Shehalach Likrach, he goes to a walled city. Now in the walled city, they celebrate Purim the day afterwards, on the 15th of Adar. And the most common example of this, which many of us probably have experienced, is if you celebrate Purim outside of Jerusalem on the 14th, and then in Jerusalem they celebrate on the 15th. So if you travel into Jerusalem, if you usually live outside Jerusalem and you travel into Jerusalem, you're now in a city where they celebrate Purim on a different day than you usually do. So that's the first case. The second case is Uben Krach. What if you live in Jerusalem, a walled city, Shehalach Li'ir, and you go to an unwalled city? So where is your obligation, halachic obligation, come from? Does it come from the walled city where... or the unwalled city? Is it where you usually live or where you have traveled to? So the Mishnah says, Im atid, if in the future, lachzor limkomo, he is going to return to his original place of residence, korei kimkomo, then he should read according to his original residence. Now, we don't know what the future means. The Gemara is going to have to explain what the future means. Does it mean that he's not moving from an unwalled city to a walled city? He's just visiting. And does it mean that he has to return before Purim? What if he returns on Purim? We don't know what any of that means. But we know that if he's planning to go back to his original place, he's still considered to be a resident of his original place. So if it's an unwalled city, he would read on the 14th. V'imlav, and if he's not planning to go back to his original city, korei imahen, then he reads with the people in the city in which he is now. Okay, that's what the Mishnah says. We're going to dive into that in the Gemara in just a moment, but we'll finish the Mishnah first. The second part of the Mishnah says, u'mehechan korei adam et ha-megillah v'yotze ba yedei chovato, u'mehechan, and from where, Korea Damata Megillah, may a man read the Megillah. Viyotze ba, that abbreviation, Yud Chet, is Yidei Chovato, he can fulfill his obligation. Meaning, is it possible that you can start the Megillah not at the beginning? Rabbi Meir Omer Kula. Rabbi Meir says no, you have to read the whole Megillah in order to fulfill your obligation. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Me'ish Yehudi. Rabbi Yehuda says basically you don't have to start until the second chapter, which introduces Mordechai. Rabbi Yossi Omer Me'achar Hadvarim Ha'ele. Rabbi Yossi says you don't have to start until the third chapter, which introduces Haman. So we have a machloket between them. Rabbi Meir says you must start at the beginning, right at the beginning of Ahasuerus' party. Rabbi Yehuda from the entrance of Mordechai, and Rabbi Yossi from the entrance of Haman. The Gemara will discuss it in more depth in our next recording. We're going to continue on to our Gemara. This is the important explanation. Rava is going to try to untangle the meaning of our Mishnah. Amar Rava. Rava says, Lo Shanu. When the Mishnah said that a unwalled city goer goes to a walled city goer, and if he returns in the future, what does it mean? Ela she'atid lachzor b'leile yedalid. It only means if he is going to go back to the unwalled city on the night of the 14th, meaning since he comes from an unwalled city, he's supposed to read the Megillah on the night of the 14th. So if he's going to get home in time to read the Megillah on the 14th, then he should just read it on the 14th when he gets home. Aval ein atid lachzor b'leile arbasar. But if he is not going to return on the night of the 14th, korei imahen, then he should read with the walled city, which means he won't read on the night of the 14th because he won't be home. He has to wait until the night of the 15th, and he'll read it with the walled city. Now, the question is, what happens if he leaves on the day of the 14th? So he's already left the walled city, and he gets back home. But he gets back home, they've already read the Megillah the night before, and he wasn't there. So does he still read it on the 15th? It seems like the answer is yes, that even in his unwalled city, he will read on the 15th, because since he missed the unwalled city time, he reverts to the walled city time. Okay? So that's what it seems, that's what it says. Now, Rashi is specifically referring it to the case here where the unwalled city goer goes to a walled city. Presumably, the same thing would be true, as we'll see in a second, of a person in a walled city who goes to an unwalled city. So if the person in the walled city is supposed to read the Megillah on the 15th, if he travels to an unwalled city, as long as he's going to come back by the time that he's going to read the Megillah in the walled city, that is, he has to come back on the night of the 15th, presumably he should read the Megillah on the night of the 15th. But if he's not going to make it back in time for the night of the 15th, then he should read it on the 14th with the unwalled city, which is where he's found. The only thing is, it's complicated there, because since the unwalled city is earlier, if he's in the unwalled city on the 14th, and he's going to be home in time to read the Megillah on the 15th in the walled city, should he celebrate Purim on both days? Should he celebrate Purim on the unwalled city when he's there on the 14th, and then he'll get home in time to celebrate the Megillah, to read the Megillah on the 15th when he gets home? It would seem like he would be responsible to do both of those. But even more so, it would seem like if he goes home from the unwalled city to the walled city, depending on how late he reads, if he goes home on the 14th, so he's already become a person who, it's not the night of the 14th, he goes home on the day of the 14th, so even though he goes back to his walled city and he has to read on the night of the 14th, on the night of the 15th, he might also have to read on the 14th, even though he has gone home already. Okay, Amar Rava. Rava says, Mena amina la. From where do I tell this to you that this is the truth? Tichtiv, as it is written in the Megillah, Al kena Yehudim haprazim. Therefore, the Jews who are in the prazim, the scattered cities, which we said are cities that don't have walls, hayoshevim be'arei haprazot, who dwell in cities that don't have walls. Now, you'll notice here that it calls them both prazim and dwellers of unwalled cities. But it says prazim twice, once prazim and once prazot. Michdi, let's see. Ketiv ha-Yehudim ha-Prazim. It already called them Jews who live in Prazi cities. Lama lila michtav, then why do I need to write? Hayoshevim b'arei ha-Prazot, those who dwell in unwalled cities. It seems repetitive. Ha-Kamash Malan, this comes to teach us, and that abbreviation, Kuf Mem Lamed, is Kamash Malan, it comes to teach us, De Paruz Ben Yomo Nikra Paruz, that a person can become a temporary resident of an unwalled city. That is, Paruz, one who is a resident of an unwalled city, ben yomo, just for one day, nikra paruz, is still considered a resident of an unwalled city. So if you are in an unwalled city on the 14th, the night of the 14th, and what we're assuming here is that you're there through the night of the 14th, you become an unwalled city dweller for that day. And since you're there on that day, and that day is Purim, you have the obligation to read the Megillah. Ashkechan paruz. So I have now found the source that you can become an unwalled city dweller, mukaf minalan. But how do you know that if you go to a walled city, that you can also become a walled city, a temporary walled city resident for one day? Svarahu, it's a svara, it's a deduction. Mide paruz ben yomo karui paruz, since a person who lives in an unwalled city can become a temporary resident for one day and is still called a resident. Mukaf ben yomo karui mukaf, then also a person in a walled city, the same rule would apply. It's not about whether it's a walled city or an unwalled city, it's about how you establish residency. Ve'amar Rava. Here's the third statement that we have of Rava. Ben Kfar, what about a village resident, Shehalach Le'ir, who goes to an unwalled city, Benkach u'Benkach Korei Mahem. Now this is a little different. The villager is going to go into an unwalled city. Whether or not he's planning to go home or not on the night of the 14th, he still has to read with the 14th. And the reason for that is slightly different. The Gemara asks, "My taima, what is the reason?" Hi, kivnei ha'ir ba'ila mikra. This one should really be reading like the residents of the unwalled city. Kivnei ha'ir, like the people of the city, ba'ila mikra. He is required to read. V'rabanan hu, and it was only the rabbis, de'akilu ala kfarim, that made a special dispensation, a leniency for the villages, kidei sheyispiku ma'im umazon la'achehen shebekrachin, in order that they should be able to provide water and food to their brothers in the unwalled cities. This is what we started our masechta with, and we said the rabbis created a special leniency to allow the people in the villages to either read the Megillah on the 11th, the 12th, or the 13th. However, in actual fact, they should read it on the 14th. This was just a special dispensation. So if a villager finds himself in a city on the day of Purim, he has to go back to the original rule, which is that he read on the 14th. The exemption was only because it was difficult for villagers to make it into the cities. But if they were in the city on the 14th, of course they have to follow the standard rule. Really, the 14th should be the day on which they read the Megillah as well. As opposed to an unwalled city going to a walled city, where really his day of reading is the 14th, but he happens to be in a city where the real day of reading is the 15th, so then we have to ask whether or not he becomes a resident. But since a villager really ought to read on the 14th to begin with, it really still applies to them. If they find themselves in an unwalled city on the 14th, they should read on that day. And presumably that would apply to a walled city as well on the 15th. As the Gemara says, Hani Mile, these words that they could read on the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th of Adar, Ki Ite Biduchte, that is when they are in their place, that is outside of the city, in a village. Ki Ite means like Yesh, when they are in Biduchte, in the place, in their place, in its place. Aval Ki Ite Be'ir, but when he is in a city, Kivnei Ha'ir Ba'ila Mikra, then he needs to read just like the residents of a city. But in other words, really the 14th is supposed to be his proper time of reading. Eit Ve'Abaye, Abaye asks the question of Rava in the reverse. Ben Krach, and a person who lives in a walled city, Shehalach Le'ir, who goes to an unwalled city, Benkach u'Benkach Kore Kimkomo, he should also read just like his place, whether or not he's planning to return or not. This is Abaye's question. The Gemara doesn't understand the question. Ben Krach Salkadatach, you say that your question is about a person who lives in a walled city. Be'im Atid Lachzor Tal Yamita, but it depends on whether or not he's planning to go back to his walled city or not. Elalav, no, your question should be a different question. Ben Kfar, your question should be if a villager goes to an unwalled city. Vilav terutze mitaretzet tane koriman. And didn't we already answer that you should read it, that he should read it with them if he goes to them? So they reject Abaye's question. This topic is discussed at length in the Rishonim. It's a little bit difficult to understand which is the key case and whether or not all the cases are the same, particularly from walled city to unwalled city and from unwalled city to walled city. But basically what it looks like, it doesn't say this in the Gemara, but in the Rishonim they say it really depends on your intention. So if your intention when you go from an unwalled city to a walled city is to get back in time during the night that you could still read the nighttime Megillah reading, then you would read like your original location. But if your intention, even if in the reality you get delayed, if your intention was to be back, you remain a resident of your original location. But if your intention was not to be back in time to read the nighttime Megillah, then you become a resident of the city in which you are, and you read with them. In the situation where you can then fix it, meaning if you've either if you've already celebrated on the 14th and now you find yourself in a walled city and you celebrate on the 15th, you would read a second time. You would be obligated in Purim a second time. Or in the reverse, if you were planning to get back in time for the 15th, but you're still in an unwalled city on the 14th, you would read it twice. So the possibility does exist, and I have done this in my life, that you could be obligated to hear the Megillah on 2 days, both the 14th and the 15th. The question we could also raise is whether or not you're obligated on all the other mitzvot as well. Are you required to have a separate suda, to do separate mishloach manot, and separate matanot levyonim? But the Gemara does not bring that up here, so I will leave it alone as well. We'll stop here at the two dots. Have a wonderful day.